Jeff, good morning, first of all.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. Gorgeous, gorgeous morning here, and should be a terrific weekend. We'll talk about the racing in a minute, but I it was a very funny situation because the race came up with Baffert in the Saudi race, and you triggered an inquiry into the distance of or the configuration of the mile and an eighth, and you were right that it's a one turn mile and an eighth, and Baffert's eyes lit up.
Well, because now you can trick McKenzie into thinking it's a one turn mile. He won't know the difference, you know. And you know that he is doing that. You know, he's an exceptional racehorse. He doesn't really want to go a mile and a quarter, and even a two turn mile and an eighth. If you look at his form, I mean, he can do it, but he's not as dominant as he is around one turn. So I think McKenzie's eyes are going to light up when he said, oh, there's the starting gate. Good. I'm running at my proper distance now. And I think that gives him maybe an edge over Mucho Gusto, who, by the way, is undefeated around one turn as well. So he won't be disadvantaged in any way. But, you know, I think he's got two major bullets to fire there. And I wouldn't be shocked if they ran 1-2.
Well, and Dick Powell also gave us some added information about that course, says that it's a very big, wide backstretch, and that posts won't be a problem, and you know, basically it's Belmont Park to an extent, and so, you know, whoever's going over and going chasing that money, they shouldn't have any, you know, any issues. Although I think anybody that prefers the two-turn mile and an eighth concept, they may be a little disadvantaged. So that topic will begin to come up here in coming weeks. Jeff, let's first of all get a reaction from you about what went on last week at Gulfstream and the two races that we talked about in addition to our Santa Anita coverage.
Yeah, well, I wasn't shocked that Mucho Gusto won, especially when the race kind of fell apart a little bit with Omaha Beach coming out, and that was disappointing, and then Spunderun didn't run either. So I actually always personally thought Mucho Gusto was a bit better horse than he was being given credit for. I know Bob always kind of thought he was the kind of horse that probably couldn't win a major race, which is one of the reasons why he shipped him around, looking at the lesser, you know, the good purse races, but not the most prestigious races. But he did ship him, and he did run well in the Travers, but, you know, he was not quite up to that. But he's a pretty good horse, and, you know, I mean, at this stage of the game, in our older, what we used to call the older handicap ranks, the older horse ranks now, he's pretty good and pretty versatile type of horse, and bred to get better with age. And, I don't know what kind of impact, you know, any kind of trip to Saudi Arabia will have any horse, and I know several of our best horses are going to go over there now, so we'll see how that impacts their campaign. But wasn't shocked that he won. I was, you know, really disappointed that Higher Power ran so poorly, but apparently he was not. He'd come down with some shipping fever or something. So, but other than that, if you take him out of the equation, then why wouldn't Mucho Gusto win? So I thought that was good, and it was a good gambling race. If you liked the race, and the handle was up, so I can think, all things considered, it was a good day and a good race.
You know, we should, with you, I'll also touch on the turf race, and we haven't given it, you know, all that much conversation this week. Obviously the great ride that Tyler Gaffleone put on for Michael Way and Mike Maker on Zulu Alpha, and I'm very frustrating because I like Zulu Alpha, and I just lately haven't been able to bet him at the right time. But Mo Forza, who we were kind of all concentrating on and has really been ascendant, Joel Rosario gave him, I mean, no chance with that ride. And these are the occasional performances from Rosario where people will just say, oh my God, what did he do there?
Yeah, a couple of things there. First of all, I missed on Zulu Alpha. I I had looked at his form, and I had thought that, well, okay, he's probably a mile and three-eighths, mile and a half horse. And I don't mind wagering on horses that are stretching out to a marathon. I'm a little more hesitant to back them when they're backing up to a middle distance. But he's a better horse than I gave him credit for. In fact, he actually did run well in the Breeders' Cup turf, except for I got kind of freaked out by the shortening of the trip. But that didn't bother him at all. He ran really well. As for Mo Forza, yeah, it was first time against older horses. You know, you just don't know. I mean, you're right, he didn't have a good trip, and he deserves another chance. But I thought maybe he might be a little vulnerable, and it turned out that he was.
Well, as Jay Priveman discussed at the start of the show, you get the sense that between the Eclipse Awards and the racing last Saturday with Pegasus, 2019 fades into the sunset, and the focus now turns toward the action 2020, particularly the sophomore scene, and we got plenty of that to keep us busy, Jeff. A nice day of racing Saturday, and in fact, let's talk about those two divisions, the handicap division and the older turf runners, because we've got two races here tomorrow in the San Pascal and the San Marcos in those divisions. Then we'll talk about the three-year-old boys.
Yeah, the San Pascual. I can't get a handle on that race. I'm sorry. I looked at Roadster. He was, of course, the winner of the San Anita Derby, and I thought he would make a nice four-year-old. And I haven't really been overwhelmed by him since the San Anita Derby. And I thought, well, he's probably beatable from a gambling standpoint. He got beat in the Native Diver. He was 4-5 that day. Midcourt, who's in this race, handle him pretty easily, so I'm not sure I trust him. And yet, I go down the list of the horses that are in the race, and I mean, I just don't see anything that I can really embrace. I mean, Midcourt came out of that race and ran, I thought, a very lethargic third in the San Antonio. I don't know whether I can trust him or not. I guess I should. Restrained Vengeance has got a chance coming in from Zia Park. Looks like he's a fit. So I don't really have a great feel for that one. I mean, this is a group that I think will take turns throughout the year. John Savage has got Combatant, picking him up from Steve Asmussen. He might find California to his liking, first-time blinkers. So those are the horses that are looking at there. As for the San Marcos, I think United will probably win. His race on the Breeders' Cup turf over this course was really good, and he's training well, blew out in 46, a couple of bullet works in the dirt. That's always a great sign, by the way, when you get a turf horse working, throwing in fast bullet works on the dirt, especially when they're trained by Richard Mandela. So I think probably United will win the San Marcos. So those are good. And then, of course, if you're talking about the Bob Lewis, I mean, a thousand words is going to be odds on, 3-5 or less for Bob Baffert. Undefeated, won the Low South Futurity very nicely. He's not the kind of horse that wows you in the morning. I mean, you think of when American Pharoah and Justify were out here and they put on a show in the morning, and in 1,000 words, he goes out there and works in company, and he seems like he gets outworked half the time. So, you know, but he may be the kind of horse that just shows up in the afternoon, and I think he'll show up tomorrow. So I think he's probably the right one. We'll just have to see whether or not he performs up to the standard that I think Nadal and Authentic are capable of doing. Those are the two other Bob Baffert Derby prospects. So that's good. And then, of course, we've got good racing in Florida and Aqueduct for three-year-olds. They've got the Withers and they got the Holy Wolf. So it's going to be fun tomorrow.
Opinions to offer elsewhere besides what's going on here?
Well, I mean, in terms of the Withers, I don't see any reason why Shotsky won't win. He's 2-1 in the morning line. I think he'll go lower than that. But he's already proven himself at Aqueduct at a mile and an eighth. He won the Remsen. I thought, you know, even though he made the lead that day, I don't think he needs the lead to win. He broke his maiden sitting off the pace. So that, I don't think he's one of these kind of horses that, you know, will not fire unless he's handed an easy lead. I think he'll stalk if that's the case. And he's trained very well in the interim. He hasn't been out off that long. I mean, he ran December 7th, so... You know, he's been kept in steady training at Laurel, so there's no reason why, you know, he won't win. And, you know, I mean, the Holy Bull is interesting as well. I mean, I think Tiz the Law is a good horse, and, you know, he's going to, I watched him train in the morning, and he looks like he's fit, and there's no reason why he can't, you know, bounce back for his best effort. He awesome win in the Champagne. He had a legitimate excuse the Kentucky Jockey Club. So for me, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of horse he is this year as a three-year-old, and I think he's going to be just fine based on what I've seen on the workouts at XBTV.com. Of course, we have the workouts at Gulfstream videos, which you can watch, and watching those works, he looks like he's spot on.
Anything today? You got a play kicking around?
Well, yeah, actually, Gulfstream in today's seventh race is first off the claim for Safi Joseph named Are You Lucky, who was claimed for $35,000 out of a grass race in which he didn't really break, but he won very nicely when he broke when he won a starter race two races back at Gulfstream Park West. Joseph is 40% first off the claim with a sample size of 78. It's not like it's 4 out of 10 or 2 out of 5, you know. So, I mean, this horse is a horse that trained really well. Again, if you go to XPTV.com, you look at the works, you will see that he, in his, one of his recent works, he outworked Tonalist Shape easily. And Tonalist Shape, who may not be a great work filly, but she's an undefeated filly. She goes in the forward gallon. Are You Lucky just kind of easily breezed to her, and I think he's going to improve considerably. So I like him in the seventh race. He's 3-1 on the morning line, going 6.5 for three-year-olds, 50 claimer, and he has to leave from the rail. So if that doesn't mess him up, and I don't think it will, I think Are You Lucky's got a really good chance to win on the race. And then in the seventh out here at Santa Anita, there's a classic stretch-out play for a horse named Promise Nothing, going 1/160. It's a maiden claiming race for three-year-olds, not much in there, and he's blinkers off, stretching out, bullet work. I mean, all the signs are there for Rafael Becerra, and you know, he's 7-2, I think, in the morning line, but I think he'll go lower. But I think Promise Nothing in the night cap here at Santa Anita today.
Excellent and solid. Yeah, nice job last week. You picked off a couple on the Beat the Host stomp.
And you're on this week, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, good luck.
I appreciate it. I went with the opener tomorrow. In fact, I'll use you as the sounding board because I gave everybody the glance at my five Gulfstream selections. My five for the Santa Anita side. The opener, there is a very inviting situation, I thought, in the first tomorrow here where Sadler puts Rosario on the import quick, and Rosario, who we've discussed so often, is just a terrific turf sprint rider, and I thought that, I mean, granted, a 3-1 favorite on John's morning line, but first time North America for quick, I thought would be logical. I went Thousand Words. I'm just a big fan. I'm worried that I'm missing the boat in the San Marcos, where I just went United on class alone, and there's also very little pace in there, and so I'm going to kind of trust Pratt to have him positioned properly like he did in the Breeders' Cup turf. But Brown Storm is the talking horse, and Brad Free and Jay Pribman making a big case for that one in the San Marcos. I went Roadster versus Midcourt, really just a price play because Midcourt, I think, is going to take plenty of money. I think King Abner is going to take some money, and I just thought Roadster might be a decent price. And then Peter's Kitten in the nightcap, in a very good competitive nightcap tomorrow, going a mile on the turf, and Rosario there for Sadler. And I thought Peter's Kitten at 5-1 should get the right, kind of the right trip in there. So that was my Santa Anita side of the Beat the Host plays.
Did you happen to go to the XBTV.com and look at Quick's recent workout on the training track? She is making her first start since September, and I wanted to find out what kind of how she looked training. Now, it's a training track work, it's a dirt work, doesn't always equate to the turf, but if you haven't, if you didn't do that, or if anybody wants to see Quick Breeze, I would say that it would be very much worth your while to check it out on XBTV.com. She, let's just say, it was mouth-watering. So I do believe that Quick is a good thing. First-time Lasix in her form. By the way, she's in a first-level allowance. She's actually, if you look at the form, she's actually
yes.
won a maiden and an allowance, but the allowance purse you know, obviously didn't clear the 15,000, so she's eligible. But I do think Quick is very, very, very much a live item. let's just say it that way. Put it that way.
Perfect. I love it. I love it. I'm glad you pointed that out. And in fact, Brad Free wrote about how, you know, she, you know, typically shouldn't be even eligible for the condition, but she is because of the money, how the money equates from her Southern Hemisphere activity. So,
by the way, I just want to drop in that United, you mentioned about the lack of pace. United can lay fairly close if he
yeah.
wants to. I
yep.
mean, and I think that what you pointed out, I mean, if, you know, they can read a form and they'll probably say, look, you're gonna fall into a great spot. You're going out of that dog league, light leg going a mile and a quarter. You're in the full four hole. The horses, I mean, chosen vessel from the rail is probably going to go, but you can just draft in behind them and just sit there. You don't have to come from way back. So I would suggest that that United will get a good trip, and, you know, let's see what he can do with it.
Jeff Siegel, everybody, and Jay Siegel Racing on Twitter and at xbtv.com. The whole team. I saw Millie Ball yesterday as well. The only person I'm missing is Zoe, who may be out of town, huh? Is she down in Florida?
She's around. She's around.
All right. Usually you hear her.
Yeah. She's scouring the backstretch. She actually does. She's my ears in the backstretch. She gets a lot of good info and always check in with Zoe.
I love it. Well, we love checking in with Jeff Siegel, everybody. Jeff, we'll see you either later or over the weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great.
Jeff Siegel, everybody, ExpressBet and XBTV. And we'll stay right here. And standing by is Ed DeRosa. We didn't get a chance to talk to Ed last week because what were you doing? You were at a coffee tasting or a what were
bourbon
you up to?
Tasting.
A bourbon. I was going to say bourbon, but I thought, it couldn't have been at 10:30 in the morning, but I guess it was.
No, yeah, these tasters work, you know, they work business hours. So that's when we did ours. I think it was 11. So we were somewhat safely into lunch territory, but it was a lot of fun. And if you're a Twin Spires VIP, you may get to taste the bourbon from the barrel we pick.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
That's good. Explain to everybody the whole package.
Yeah, well, so certain distilleries make available single barrels. People can buy the barrel, basically, and then they bottle it for you. And we did a barrel of Blanton's, which is fairly popular. Most people, I'm sure, are familiar with Blanton's.
You bet.
And they set four barrels aside, and 19 of us, so fairly democratic group. Usually it's a smaller group, but, you know, it's a team-building event as much as a VIP one, or down the road it'll be a VIP one. And we all got together and sampled a few pours from each barrel. And after three rounds, we settled on the barrel we like best. And it'll be bottled in the standard Blanton's bottle with the horse on top and all that. And I'm not sure what the sticker will say exactly, but it'll say, you know, something to the effect of a pick for, you know, Twin Spires or something like that.
Nice. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
So, a little different. You know, we all love the calendars and the pens and the jackets, but you so choose to imbibe. A bottle of Blanton's isn't too bad either. And then if you don't, you know, drinking isn't for you. You know, it makes a great gift for someone you know who does. So,
No doubt.
Can't imagine it'll go to waste.
Very cool. I'm glad we fleshed it out. I also want you to flesh out another topic. People can utilize Optics EQ and they can buy their own Blanton's. Give everybody a snapshot. I will probably talk to John Doyle next week in Vegas, Ed, and you'll be around too. But it came up a couple of different times, and in particular with Brian Schenvert the other day. Talking about his win in the Pegasus betting challenge. Give everybody just a quick overview of how the product works and what you like about it, because I know you've been using it to success yourself.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed using it. It's easy to, obviously can be daunting, similar to sheets. You know, there's some hieroglyphic style configuration to what you're looking at, but it it really is intuitive, and you get the hang of it pretty quick. So please, anyone out there who's thought about taking the plunge, absolutely do not let that be a daunting factor for you. But there's several things that go into it. There's some notes and some PP style figures and things of that nature, but I'm definitely a user of what they call the plot, which projects not only a horse's position in the race, but also how it relates to other horses. And, you know, as a BriskNet user, I really enjoy the pace ratings. I enjoy what BriskNet does with the Kieran speed points. But that really does only take you so far, because depending on who else is in the race, that definitely has an effect on where a horse will be. And so Optics Plot takes that next step, similar to those who are familiar with what Craig and the Timeform people have done with their pace projector. I would say it's fair to say the Optics does rely a little more on, you know, the data to say not only where they're going to be, but how they're going to be running throughout the race. So it's not just about, okay, they're a front runner, they're going to be coming from behind. It also tells you via the shape, square, circle, and the size of them, when they're going to do their running, their best running, and if it's going to be good enough, ultimately. And they definitely go out of their way. John and Emily would both tell you this is not meant to, you look at a plot and come up with a singular pick, which I actually like that a lot, Steve, because I'm definitely a style handicapper that tries to be price conscious, that is very aware that in any given race, you're going to have a handful of contenders, and long-term success is going to be betting the overlays and pitching underlays, especially favorites. And the plot really distills that, to bring up another bourbon term, down for me really well. And sometimes you're in a contest and you're looking for a price, and you can find one on the plot very quickly, much quicker than, you know, trying to handicap a race horse by horse using PPs, even great PPs like BriskNet. So I like it for that reason. And it definitely bucks some trends, very similar to, I think, when Ragazin and Thoroughgraph and information like that first came out, and even Beyer, which he talks about in his book. It's just something not everyone has, and if you trust the data, you will find those 10, 20-to-1 horses that look good on the plot that, you know, for whatever reason, maybe don't stick out as much on other handicapping vehicles. So it's one of those balances, Steve, because, as you know, they use BriskNet data and we're a partner in that regard and certainly want to see them do well and make money, and people make money off them. But at the same time, if everyone used it, the edge is gone. So, you know, have to be careful how much we love it, but it really is a good product. And especially as we come up on the NHC and in the aftermath of that Pegasus, I really think it's a good tool for contest players, because you can look quickly, as sometimes you often do, as you adapt and realize what kind of price you need. And there are 20 and 30 to 1 horses on those plots that look like they have a chance.
Well, and you bring up, I mean, for me, Thoroughgraph does that, where, you know, there's horses that are competitive, you know, based on obscured performances, that whether it's ground loss, in a lot of cases, that, you know, doomed them, you know, or just, you know, however pace affected a race, and a horse, you know, probably is being, you know, let go at a price that it shouldn't. I mean, that's the key. And whether it's, you know, picking winners or just, you know, finding a vein and a theme in any particular, you know, info package that you like, and weaving it into, you know, your play, that, you know, that's an edge that is just required right now, whether it's workouts or whether it's Thoroughgraph. In this case, you know, here's another new product. And I like bringing these things up. You know, you mentioned Timeform and what Mark did with Timeform. The fact that there's all these different entities that put the time and money and invest in creating this information and you know, going into business to put this kind of information out there for players, it's a real compliment to the game, and it's an endorsement of the game. So I like, you know, and everybody is open to I think most players are open to, you know, finding out what else is out there. And you know, every time we bring up something new and different that isn't necessarily widely known, you know, you've written about it a few times, and you know, there's the occasional Twitter thread that you know, that balloons up. But I wanted you to talk about it, and we'll talk to John when we're in Vegas.
Yeah, and I appreciate that and agree with everything you said. And, you know, for those who caught my year in review for 2019, which was not good, but, you know, one thing I thought of, Steve, is there was no instance, you know, even though I suffered some beats and losses and definitely was not a good year relative to other years, especially, but I never felt like, man, if I just would have put three more hours into that card, I could have crushed it. We're at a point, and I think when I really started getting serious about handicapping mid-2000s, as I got older and, you know, was able to have a little more discretionary income, there was sort of a sense, I don't know if it was just my peer group or racing in general, that, man, you really got to put in all this time, and you got to watch all these replays, and you got to do all this pedigree work, and you're throwing the kitchen sink at every race, and that just is not efficient. And I, you know, people like digging into all that stuff, and I do too, but I definitely don't feel like the longer you look at a race, the more likely your rate of success goes up. So when I think of things like optics or the summary page at the back of a race and the BristNet PPs or the chance to thumb through some thoroughgraph numbers, I've come to realize that you can find a bad favorite in 1 or 2 minutes or a beatable favorite. And to me, that is a big key to this type of information is, okay, now you have a hook to maybe spend a little more time on that race. And then maybe you like what you see, you like a couple contenders that you think are going to be overlays. Then you can put time into betting the race properly. But I really think gone are the days where you feel like, oh, I'm going to play today, so I'm going to spend 2 hours handicapping two full cards. You know, maybe there's a carryover sequence and you need to look at all five races. That's fine. But, you know, as bad as things were last year, I really don't think it was ever a situation of, man, I wish I would have put two more hours into that card. It wouldn't have mattered.
Much more of this next week when we're in Vegas, when we'll talk methods and habits and practices and, you know, adding layers to your handicapping arsenal. And let's handicap. What do we got, Ed? We got about 5 minutes.
Well, we got beatable favorites, I think, in these Derby prep races. In the Withers, I guess I'll stay on brand and pick against the Remsen winner. Now, I will say usually the Remsen winner is finding himself cutting back because they go to Gulfstream and maybe they have to run a mile or mile on the 16th. And that's not the case here. Shotsky does get to stay at the mile and eight. But, you know, looking at the BristNet PPs, they're all E or EP types except for match player. And this one definitely interests me. And did a podcast with Brian DiDonato from TDN, and he kind of landed on the same horse for a lot of the same reasons. So I'm not sure we'll get 9-2. But, you know, the debut just came up short, but got a big late pace rating, which I've seen augur well going forward when horses do that kind of running late on debut. And then the return about a month and a half later got the win by 4 1/4 lengths. Honor Code did win as a 2-year-old, that infamous big win on debut. I think it was Travers Day or maybe closing day at Saratoga, but seems like his runner is a little more late developing, and just think this one's going to get the pace set up and should have no problem with 9 furlongs. So I'm gonna say 3-1 is probably my floor, but definitely my top pick is Max Player.
Max Player getting a couple of pushes. You and Nick Tamaro and. And James actually likes the other Linda Rice, Prince of Pharaohs, and we also got a little bit of Porto. So maybe there's the horse that's being obscured here out of this conversation is Monday Morning Quarterback with Butchie Reed. You know, I understand going up against these favorites in the three races, you know, and they're all there's kernels of talent and quality about pretty much you know, somebody in each of those fields. What about Florida?
Well, Tis the Law, I was against it 3-5 in the Kentucky Jockey Club, and I know there's varying degrees of how much trouble certain people think he got into. I still think that was a race he could have won, especially being 3-5. You know, between the surface and the trip, certainly some things conspired against him. But forget Silver Prospector. I definitely think he can improve off the Smarty Jones, but, you know, Finnick the Fierce didn't flatter the race by any means either in the LeCompte. And, you know, we're looking at 3-4-5 again on Tis the Law. And I just have to go against him. Steve, he got a 97 Brisnet on his debut. He's gone backwards on that scale in the next two races. And granted, the workout reports are good, but even if he gets back to the debut number, that's not as fast as either Toledo or the Being Cone Horse ran in that one-turn mile race. And a little nervous about where Toledo's going to land wagering-wise, because really he is the obvious alternative to the chalk. But I'd be happy to take higher than 2-1 with this Into Mischief colt getting the rail in the short stretch.
All right. My read on the Tis the Law performance was you can't keep a horse held and held and held and held for a mile and change and then say, oh, run now. That's not how it works.
I don't respond like to that typically either.
Yeah, they say, I've been wanting to run here for a minute and a half, and you've been saying no. Now, little guy, now you're telling me to go? It's like, what? Come on. All right, what about California?
I do think this is the most likely winner of the favorites. In 1,000 words, I think is the highest ranked in my derby list currently of those horses running this weekend. So, you know, from a favorite standpoint, I like them at 2-5. You know, it's kind of like, well, maybe that might create opportunity elsewhere. And Coder and Royal Act or two are trying dirt for the first time, which I do think is interesting. Whether it's good enough to beat 1,000 words, who should get the same setup given high velocities back here from the low sale futurity as well, I don't know. So this will be an instance of maybe checking the exacta will pays, and if people go nuts on the other backer, Tis a Magician underneath. From the Mandela Barn with sort of an Omaha Beach look after finally breaking his maiden. I could see using one of the turf horses here, but I do think 1,000 words the most likely winner of the three races.
Very good. All right. What about what else you got? Must be another spot or two.
That's all I got for the Derby points races, and actually plan on digging into Oaklawn a little bit today. And I didn't know this until Andy tweeted it, so thank you to him. But Pick Five Carryover at Aqueduct certainly demands some attention. I will say I'm excited to see Taraz tomorrow in the Martha Washington. Steve, I think she could be our superstar this year, which, you know, saying a lot given Monomoy Girls coming back and Midnight Bizou and Maximum Security. I'm a big believer in his talent, but I just keep going back to Garrett O'Rourke showing up from Lexington for her debut and doing what I've done at Churchill the last 2 years. Have had a lot of opportunity to be in the paddock and read body language and just, you know, see excitement or lack thereof with connections when they're starting a horse. And this one absolutely felt different from the jump, and the language from the barn has, and granted trainers are good at that sort of thing, but it just feels different with this one, and I'm looking forward to seeing if she backs it up on the track.
Well, she's generating all kinds of excitement, and it is one of those scenarios where I don't want to call it, you know, the fastest horse in the world kind of thing, but where we laugh about that every summer at Saratoga. But it certainly has got people you know, eagerly anticipating. So could come out of it?
Obviously be sitting on my hands at 1-5 or whatever she is, but that's okay. It's, you know, fun to watch the town as well. I need a push from you, Steve. What's a can't miss at Rose Rabbit Live?
I don't even remember. I went last year. It's a blur. I can't even tell you.
Well,
I'd have to go back through the phone.
All right. Well, if something triggers that you remember was unbelievable, make sure you let me know. But
well, you know who else loves it is Duke. Duke Matisse loves it too.
Oh yeah. All right.
Yeah, Duke's the one who put me on Rose Rabbit Lie in the Cosmo.
Well, I will have a full report on Friday because I'm
outstanding
going tonight.
All right, and well, I'll see you. So we'll do. Obviously, we'll do it live, and we'll do plenty of check-ins. We'll do plenty of check-ins, and you'll be on hand to help Brisnet players and Twinspires players in Vegas if they need PPs and need reports and workouts and everything else.
I'm sequestered in the suite, which is good or bad. People have to work a little harder to get the PPs, but looks like a really nice room at least. So hopefully it'll be comfortable. But most importantly, anyone in the NHC who wants hard copies of PPs, please do contact me via Twitter or at drrosa@brisnet.com, and we'll make sure you know where I am and how to get PPs. And if you're strictly a downloader, and you're playing in the NHC, we have a similar offer as Jerry Brown. We'll turn you on, and you can download what you need, and just make sure you tell people you use BrisNet when you take it down.
There you go, and that's what everybody's that's what was so great about Chris Littlemore. It was like, Chris, what's your handicapping? PPs. I look at PPs. that was it.
Going back to what I said earlier, I mean, I think in a contest like that, I mean, you know what you need. Like, I mean, obviously it varies a little bit year to year, but you're not looking for 2-1 every race. So, you narrow it down, know the races you're comfortable with, and take your stand.
Exactly. And you know, as we say all the time, when you look at the standings at the end, and you know you're going to see names that are just completely well known as some of the top players on the contest front, and they're going to crap out, and they're going to miss, you know, they're going to go 1-11, whatever the number is this year in terms of 15. They got to run for you. There's nothing you can do. You get a couple of seconds, and then you have to start, you know, reaching for a little higher prices, and it changes your approach. And it's just like all of us that are playing, you know, at any time. But it's just such a unique situation that you just not only have to be right, virtually, I don't know, 60% of the things that need to happen over the course of the 3 days has to happen right for you. I mean, in addition to the handicapping, there's everything else that just has to fall in place. I mean, it's not there's people that wrap up at the end of the 3 days, and they shrug their shoulders and say, I wouldn't have done anything differently.
That's right. And I mean, you know, it's like poker. You can make the right choice and still miss. And sometimes you get lucky too. And, you know, it's a grind over 2 days. And in addition to handicapping acumen, certainly takes a strong-willed constitution to get through it.
Ed DeRosa, everybody, EJXD2 on Twitter. And those of you coming out to Vegas, Ed will be on hand. Are you doing a mixer, a Twinspires mixer for everybody too?
That's sort of what the Rose Rabbit Lie thing.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Looked up some some players that like to treat to a nice dinner, and Steve Pallardy will be out there, and hopefully give people a nice meal to launch their NHC success.
Excellent. Well, Ed, I appreciate it. I will see you out there.
Very good. Travel safe, everyone.
Ed DeRosa, everybody, EJXD2. and anything you need from the Brisnet team, if you're a Brisnet player, and so forth. All the materials, he prints, he's got it all, stacks and stacks of paperwork. And we have stacks as well, including the DRF Clocker Report. Mike Welch, for just a quick couple of minutes, I blew it. I should have had Mike on at 11:20 after Siegel, and then Ed, because we've only got a little tiny window here with Mike. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
A couple of real quick notes. Let's talk about the three-year-old races in short order. We got both the Swale and the Holy Bull with Tis the Law and Greenlight Go trying to kind of get some momentum back to start their years.
Yeah, the Swale is actually probably a more interesting race, at least from a betting standpoint. You have three legitimate contenders in there. Greenlight Go, as you mentioned, a title coming up, that monster maiden win against State Bred, big jumping class here for the new connections. And Mischievous Alex, who also ran a monster in his two-year-old finale, has been given plenty of time to recuperate from that effort by trainer John Service. I think he could, you know, maybe spring the upset here. He'll be the third choice, I'm sure. Greenlight Go, as you said, you know, very talented, very good two-year-old campaign. Didn't get quite the trip that Jimmy wanted, being on the lead in the Champagne, but seems to be training well. And this is a start for his three-year-old campaign, I'm guessing. Good effort here, and he looks at the Fountain of Youth or one of the preps.
Any thoughts about some of the newer faces in here?
In that race? Well, Chivalry would be another one. Coming off three straight wins. The last one, he had a pretty good pace set up, and he finally forged clear, but these are a lot faster, so he'll really have to step up there. As for the Holy Bull, Tis the Law, obviously his race to lose. He seems to be training well, owns a big class edge and numbers edge over these. I thought Toledo is eligible to take a big step forward. He's well posted on the rail with that short turn. Short run to the first turn in mile and a 16 races. His last race, he might have been best in there if he got a little cleaner run. But his numbers keep going in the right direction. Distance looks like, extraditions looks like it'll be perfect for him. So I think if anybody's going to beat Tis the Law here, it's probably going to be Toledo. But Tis the Law is going to have to run into, you know, he had a rough trip in the Jockey Club over the wet track. And that is the one caveat we have to talk about here is the weather report for tomorrow is dismal. Supposed to get a lot of rain overnight and Jesus. Into the morning. So this could really throw a monkey wrench into this entire card, especially the turf races. And, you know, did Tis the Law not like the slop at Churchill Downs, or he just didn't? It was more the trip. I think it was probably more the trip. But he might wind up with a wet track again. It just depends on how much rain he gets. And when it's going to end, but it looks like 80% right now. So starting tonight into the morning.
Well, going in and let you know, not knowing if we're going to have yielding or whatever. But and it is interesting. Some people did think enough to enter MTOs as it happens in the Dania Beach and in the Swedish Chant.
This jockey, an interesting MTO, obviously in the Dania Beach for Sappy Joseph. Smart move there. The Swedish Chant, I think the only one is Philly Jean King, who may still not be good enough. But, again, you don't know what's going to be left. I mean, you look at a race like the Swedish Chant, and there's really nobody in that's won on the main track except Ibietsu for Rusty Arnold. So, again, the weather could really throw a real wrench into this card. I'm sure they're going to try to keep at least the stakes on at all costs. But right now, the reports are, it looks like a lot of rain is heading this way. Hopefully we'll get lucky and it'll swing south or north.
Let me ask you, Mike, too. I didn't talk much about the Forward Gal. Tonalist Shape, Safi Joseph is going to be a 2-5. But you, I think, if I'm not mistaken, had an idea about trying to beat her.
You know, on paper, she should lose. I mean, her numbers are just too fast for these class-wise and whatever. But she just doesn't seem to be training quite as sharp going into this race as she was going into the Hud, where she ran off the screen against, I believe, what's going to turn out to be lesser competition than what she faces here. So with that in mind, I mean, she may win, I mean, and just on her class and sheer ability. But just because she's going to be probably 1 or 2 to 5. I took a shot with Street of Dreams, who ran a much improved race last time, and it was over a sloppy track, which she may get again here. And she seems to be working well coming out of it. Poor Chris Landeros trying to break out of this Meatlawn slump. Maybe this will be the spot. What better spot than doing it in a Grade 3 race? So just strictly the price play there with Street of Dreams, just because I just have this nagging feeling that Tonalist Shape isn't quite working as well going into this one as she did in the last.
Well, and speaking of works, you know, another nice weekend of racing and an opportunity to use the DRF Clocker Report. And we certainly, Mike, have got to acknowledge the terrific push on Zulu Alpha last week based on the work efforts. So that was a nice way to boost things along for those that took the advice.
And for those that took the advice, also send a little Christmas card next year to Tyler Gaffleyone for just a superb ride in there. That combined with the way he's been doing resulted in that victory. He did win pretty easily, but he got that ground-saving trip. So that was a combination of a lot of things, but that's what you need sometimes to cash a good ticket like that, in races of that nature especially.
Speaking of some of the work advice, you look to the two maiden specials on the card tomorrow. There's one early, 6 furlongs for the 3-year-olds, Ellis Island for Todd Down Inside, Ajar for Kieran McLaughlin, a couple of the firsters. There's 3 others as well, Conformity for Mark Hennig. Jimmy Jerkins has got Edge of Fire, and Speedy Mac for Ian Wilkes. And then Palm Springs comes back in the mile spot, and this will be a race that could produce a Fountain of Youth runner or something, you know, stake quality, and Palm Springs is going to be probably even money.
Yeah, I would think, if not less in there, you know, came touted as the second coming first time out, really didn't get a great trip down on the inside breaking from the rail, which is where his stablemate breaks in the second race, but he also ran into a pretty good horse that day, too.
Yeah, Violent City.
The Ian Wilkes first-time starter. So you combine those two factors, I think Palm Springs, you know, to me looks like the most logical winner on the card at a small price. You know, the outside post going a mile, not as bad as the two-turn races, but you still got to try to get over, but, you know, somewhere save some ground. He's quick, though. I look for him to just come running out of there and hopefully either making the lead or just stalking the pace. I don't see a lot of speed inside him. I'm looking for Palm Springs. If he just breaks cleaner than he did last time, just go right to the lead and beat these at a very short price. This one I didn't try to beat. I think he's gonna win here.
Now, being outside, Javier Castellano gets the survey, everything going on the inside paths. I got to ask you what you did in the nightcap, Mike, because I used it for Beat the Host. I thought that, you know, that horse that's parked outside. In fact, now that I think about it, you mentioned that the 11 and 12 hole is 1 for 50 at the meet so far.
Well, if our DRF stats are right, that's what it said. So, I mean, now, again, this race could come off the grass, which changes everything. And you could grab a scratch or two, which means he might wind up at 9 or 10. But, yeah, at a mile, anyway, that was the stat I found. So, you know, on paper, he looked like the logical one, but I went against him. I took a shot with Kingsville. There's also a lot of speed in here, which is why I didn't take Robin taking charge, because he's going to have to deal with Gunslinger and Dr. Dub. So I just took a shot with Kingsville. This horse has shown some ability on the turf in the past, and coming off a long layup, but Elizabeth Dobles has certainly been doing very well. Maybe going to need a race with only 3 published works on his form, but I said, why not? But and again, he might be in a good spot, actually, if this race comes off the grass. He's one of the few in here with main track wins on his resume.
Well, and there, I was about to say, there aren't too many. This will get ugly. If this comes off the turf, I guess State of War, with Paco and Kelly Breen, maybe.
Yeah, I would say too, it's the most eligible. If we do get the rain, that's probably the first one they're going to look to take off the turf.
Exactly.
One of the first ones with some better races along the way.
Ugh, all right. Well, Mike, I appreciate, and I'm sorry I didn't get to you earlier, but this was very, very helpful, I hope, for everybody. Have a good weekend.
Okay, you too.
Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch, the Clocker Report, Don Harris, Mike, and Pace and Dave, the clocker formerly known as Pace and Dave. Now he's Palm Beach Downs Dave. Doesn't have the same pop as Pace and Dave. Play the Ponies, if you want to, is Dave's Twitter moniker. And I don't know if Donald Harris, is on Twitter, actually. If he is, he's kind of hiding under the radar. I think, actually, Clocker DH, there it is. I do have him. I am following Don. I don't know how much he tweets, though. Does he tweet a lot? Let's see. What was his last tweet? Christmas. So, I don't know. You're not going to get a lot of tweet support from Don Harris. You're just going to have to buy the Clocker Report instead. We rifled through those 3 hours, I would say. Thanks to Mike and Ed DeRosa, Jeff Siegel, James Scully, Nick Tamaro, Hammer, Jay Privman, Deja on the board. Beat the host. Beat me tomorrow. My selections will be up soon. And, of course, if those races come off the turf, it'll be very easy because you'll have the advantage of knowing who's in the fields. So good chance maybe tomorrow if that happens. I'd be disappointed because it's a nice card. But so be it. Good luck to everybody. All right, we'll talk to you. We'll see you maybe here this afternoon or tomorrow. And talk to you on Monday from Santa Anita Park. Recap the weekend and start to look forward to the National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas. Thanks, everybody.